Chapter 87 Push. Evening had fallen, but the cool breeze and soft shadows brought no relief from the toil of war. Gerund and 10 of his knights waited astride their horses in an alley close to the Quick Blade Inn. After the fight with Sethra Dron, his contingent of men had the only intact cavalry left, owing to Maywin's advice to hide the horses until the birds were vanquished. His heroics in slaying the Dron had earned him respect and renown from the men under his command, although it had also left him with a shield arm that ached terribly. With magic, healing, and impossibility, he had to rely on Maywin's ministrations. Herbs and poultices, while welcome, took time, and time was not on their side. Once Sethra Dron had been defeated, the surge of hope and enthusiasm among the armies defending Mikmir lasted a short 2 hours, until Mikik's host poured into the city. Heavy arrows fell from deadly archers, and the armoured Gagons pounded down the gates like they were made of rotten wood instead of reinforced oak. Uyumark sprinted and leaped and marched into the city in droves, and brutal fighting spilled from street to street. Despite the heavy bloodshed, pride and purpose remained firm until Gamadron made an unwelcome appearance. The memory still chilled Gerund's spine. It came in the shape of a giant man, snakes coalescing to form a chest, legs, arms, and even a wicked head, all of it constantly slithering and slipping about, its constant angry hiss a poison to the ears. What archers dared stick their heads above the walls shot arrows into the roiling mass, only rewarded by single snakes dropping away from the main body. But as Gamadron approached the walls, the man shape simply fell apart, the vipers scattering in every direction among the ranks of soldiers, biting horses and legs, the venom of such potency that death claimed its victims with alarming speed. Bodies blackened everywhere, dark lumps in the dimming street. While Gerund wished he could repeat the same trick he had pulled with Sethra Dron, the slithering chaos of serpents made it impossible to find the body that hosted the spirit. His men had nothing but the force of arms to butcher the snakes one at a time as they darted about with uncanny speed, sinking fangs into their prey and then fleeing to hide in nooks and crannies to await another victim. Gerund had lost nearly 20 men and 6 horses to the serpents, but as the day wore on they encountered them less frequently, and he hoped they had at last killed enough to consider Gamadron vanquished. Fires burned throughout the city, the thick smoke adding to the already hazy sky. Every intake of breath tasted acrid, and the entire company reeked of fire and sweat. Their enemies had pushed them back to the castle wall of Mikmir in 1 day, and Gerund feared the city would fall before the sun rose the next morning. General Harband had ordered one last assault before nightfall to try to push their enemies back to the outer wall, but Gerund thought the real reason was to buy them time to get inside the castle to prepare for a night of anguish and hard fighting. Nothing they had done all day seemed to dent the ferocity or capability of their foe. However many they killed, more simply poured through the ruined gates, and the enemy never retreated or rested, exerting a constant pressure that Rugarth's forces could hardly match, despite the advantages afforded them by the city. A trill whistle rang through the air, Maywin's signal. Gerund raised his hand and his knights readied themselves. Out on the street, his foot soldiers were drawing a contingent of Uyumark toward a killing field of their choosing. It was the first offensive strategy they had attempted since the battle began, and Gerund was determined to make it count. Archers poised at the ready on nearby roofs, and his cavalry were secreted with him in the alleys at the top of the hill. His footmen served as unfortunate but necessary bait. They would draw the Uyumark to the street, the archers would let loose, and then the cavalry would charge down the hill and decimate them from the rear. The half-elf's whistle meant the footmen were within a quarter mile and, if they obeyed orders, were in a fighting retreat. A second whistle, but too soon. A fighting retreat should have taken longer. In a few moments he could hear his men yelling and the thumping of Uyumark drums, but the expected clash of weapons and yelled orders from his captains were conspicuously missing. This was not a fighting retreat or an orderly one. His men were running for their lives. After a few moments more, he knew why. The very stones beneath their feet shook with its coming. A Gagon. Gagon, Gerund said, though he felt his announcement was unnecessary. Switch to spears! The third signal. His men had rounded the corner. The Uyumark would be charging up behind. His men readied their weapons as the first of the bowmen began to loose their barrage, the pounding of the Gagon's feet close. When the fourth whistle came, Geraint hefted his heavy spear and tore out of the alley with a mighty yell. The other line of cavalry galloped out of an alley on the opposite side, and in two columns they descended the hill. So few, Geraint thought as he surveyed the scene. Not even half of his footmen had survived the ruse. As they ran to escape their pursuers, the footmen darted to the side to allow room for the horses to do their work. As Geraint had intended, the Uyumark had pooled at the bottom of the hill. Only the Uyumark warriors continued their pursuit of the flyers. The bashes had stopped, hastily forming a line in preparation to cut down the horses with their wicked battle axes. The Gagon, bringing up the rear, had turned about, arrows from the archers protruding from its back, while it used its massive club to beat at the buildings from which the archers shot. The Uyumark archers returned in kind, their deadly aim thinning Geraint's men at an alarming rate. An Uyumark warrior raised its club, and Geraint took it on the shield as he flew past. The shock and pain of his injured arm watered his eyes in agony. The basher ahead of him raised its axe to strike his horse's legs, but one of Maywen's arrows punched into its face through the tiny visor in its helmet, and it fell. Geraint shot through the gap and knocked down an Uyumark archer before unleashing his heavy spear toward the raging Gagon, which was stomping about 20 feet ahead. The spear flew true, sticking the Gagon at the base of the neck between its helmet and back armor. It collapsed without a twitch to the street, limbs flaccid and body crushing the unfortunate Uyumark nearby. The rest of the knights unleashed their spears at the Uyumark archers and bashers, felling enough to allow Geraint's archers to resume their work. Sword drawn, Geraint rallied his foot soldiers and knights to him, and in minutes they had butchered every Uyumark in the street. Wincing, Geraint dismounted as Maywen left her perch at the top of the hill and ran to him.
"Well done, Lord Kildan," she complimented. "You are earning a name for yourself today."
"It cost too many men," he lamented. "We won this battle, but paid a heavy price. Would you mind helping me unbuckle this shield? I'm afraid I haven't had time to find a squire yet."
"How is your arm?" she asked,
as she carefully lifted his shield and undid the inner buckle. He sucked air through his teeth at the painful movement.
"It's worthless. I can't lift the shield any more. I'll be better without it, though if another Sethradron shows up, I may ask for it back. Knight Captain Gremaine, get everyone together and let's see what we have left for the push."
Maywen handed the shield to one of the nearby foot soldiers and probed Geraint's arm, shaking her head.
"You've broken it. Try not to move it too much."
"I think an Uyumark warrior broke it for me when I came down the hill."
"I think you broke it yourself when you jumped off the wall like a madman."
Geraint smirked.
"This from the person who took Jen along for a little suicide run on an Uyumark unit."
Maywen leaned on her bow.
"I didn't say I disapprove of what you did. After all, the brave are merely the stupid who live through their poor decisions. I just hope we can live long enough to tell Lord Mickmere about your exploits."
"I wish Lord Mickmere would arrive," Geraint said.
"I have every confidence in General Harband, but somehow I think our mutual friend would have done better at the defence of the city."
"I agree."
At last his men had gathered, and Geraint had to stifle a frown and put on a proud face instead. He'd lost nearly half his men in less than a day of fighting, and the ones that remained were bloody, beaten, and exhausted. They had one more battle to fight before night completely fell, and Geraint sought the words to tease a flame from what embers remained of their enthusiasm. He raised his good arm for silence.
"Well done," he yelled. "Well done. I am fortunate to have the bravest and the best of men under my command. We have sacrificed dearly this day for a good cause, but we have made the enemy pay for every inch forward. I could ask for no finer men in this dark hour than the ones that stand bruised and bleeding before me. I am honoured to call you countrymen, and no man can fault our valour and skill at arms this day. Now our half-elf friend tells me that I have broken my shield arm, and can no longer protect myself. My arm may be broken, but my spirit is not. When the trumpet sounds, I will ride this horse, and I will take my sword and cut the enemy back to the gates of this city."
As he said the words, the trumpet sounded, but not for attack. It sounded for retreat.
"Things are worse than even I thought."
"We are being called within the gates," he announced. "Let's go with all speed and see what deeds of valour await us this night. Cavalry to the back! Form on me. Foot soldiers, walk at the head."
They traversed the rack of the streets with the best speed they could, bodies of monsters and men littering every thoroughfare and alley in all directions. They met up with the main column of men streaming uphill toward the main gates, a ragged collection of the weary, wounded and fearful, shuffling eagerly toward the greater protection of the main wall. "Rugoth has enjoyed uncontested peace for so long they have forgotten the rigours of war," Gerund mused. While his soldiers fared little better, the war with Ogmir at least had ensured him veteran fighters in his ranks. They merged in with the stream, several looking on the mounted knights with jealousy. Mikkik's minions had taken a heavy toll on the horses in the city, and the loss of that advantage was felt keenly. They rode in silence through the deep archway of the massive stone walls, their sturdy construction and imposing height inspiring some comfort. Even the most colourful imagination would find difficulty conjuring up an enemy that could breach such a fortification, but Mikkik so far had proven his genius at finding ways to overcome every device they had to defeat him. Only now could the soldiers who had served at Echo Hold appreciate the deceptive joke Mikkik had played on them during their carefree days of archery practice against the hapless Uyumark streaming up the road to be slaughtered. In the waning stages of twilight they emerged into the courtyard, the thick press of men rendering the immense space cramped and noisy. A captain of Rugoth unhelpfully ordered them to find a spot to encamp and to have the healthiest half of his men to report to the base of the walls. This duty done, Gerund found Maywen and made their way toward a pavilion set up in front of the great hall, where the generals consulted together, all looking as ragged as their men. Even the steely-eyed, half-mad General Harband appeared spent. Three of Tolnor's dukes were among the party, and they perked up a little as Gerund and Maywen joined them.
"How are you, lad?" General Harband inquired as they approached the table. "Lad?"
Duke Greenwall protested.
"This is Duke Kildan, and you should render him the respect he is due."
"Be at ease, my lord," Gerund said. "He and I need not stand on ceremony. What is our situation?"
"Dire,"
General Harband reported.
"We have had no answer for this kind of war. No one's fought an army of this magnitude and composition in 200 years. We paid for our naivety today."
"We should have abandoned the city and fought them from here, behind the walls," General Tarun opined.
"We thought we would have the advantage in the streets, but birds with dagger-sharp beaks, poisonous vipers, gaggons at every turn?"
"How many men have we lost?" Gerund asked, fearing the answer.
"It's hard to say," General Harband replied, rubbing his thin goatee. "At least a third are dead. Only about half of what remain are in fighting condition. Let's just hope the walls are enough to buy us some time to heal and wait for Ogmir or Lord Mikmir to show up with reinforcements. I thought we would hold the city for days, not hours."
"We'll hold this wall forever," General Tarun stated confidently. "We've got ballistae for the damned Gaggon, and they would grind their battering ram to powder on the gates. We'll hold."
"Where do you want me?" Gerund asked.
"He should rest," Maywen piped in. "He has a broken arm."
Gerund shook his head. "I can still lead and swing a sword. Put me on the wall somewhere."
"Go there now and take the southern side," Harband commanded. "But when the fighting starts, I'll pull you down to rest and bring you in reserve if needed. I know you're metal, boy, but trying to mount a wall defense with a broken arm will get you killed. Don't worry, I'll be there to beat them back. Besides, defeating that cursed flock of birds has earned you a pass."
Gerund bowed and left, striding through the makeshift camps with Maywen in tow.
"He didn't want a pass. I'm sorry if I put you in a bad light in front of your peers," she apologized, "but they are right. You cannot lead a defense along the wall as wounded as you are."
Gerund gritted his teeth. He could not afford an injury.
"Do you have any of that pain draught that you gave to the Shalane when she broke her wrist?"
"No, but if I could borrow a fire and a pot, I could brew it.
It would help."
Maywen left, and Gerund ascended the steps to the south wall, relieving a general forthright of Rugoth. The men on the walls were Rugothian and fresh, having been stationed inside the protective fort for the duration of the battle. They wore the blue capes and silver breastplates of the castle guard, and although clean and rested, their faces registered the same sober worry as the men who had passed through the now-sealed gates. While Gerund diligently inspected and enforced discipline, in the end, there was little to do but wait while Mikkik hatched some further plot or threw some new horror at them. Without the moons in the sky, sundown brought a darkness compounded by the choking smoke that hung over the city in a cloud. Pockets of orange beneath the haze created pools of flickering, diffuse light that brightened and dimmed as the fires breathed and then starved when the fuel ran out. The constant chatter and commotion behind the wall made the abandoned city seem all the more dead by comparison, a giant graveyard for the brave men hewn down during the day. Maewyn coming up the stairs holding a waterskin brightened Jeren's prospects. His arm ached horribly, and the constant pain robbed him of vigour and clouded his mind.
"Take only a sip every hour or so," she warned. "It will make you sleep if you drink too much."
He nodded and eagerly took the dosage prescribed while she watched to ensure he didn't overdo it.
"Any developments up here?" she asked.
"No, nothing has approached the walls as yet, and it is simply too dark to see anything. They must know not to let us rest. They have us on the edge of exhaustion and fear. A bold push now could end this battle tonight."
"We can hope the wall is as strong as they say," Maewyn said,
coming to a crenellation on the edge and peering into the abyssal darkness.
"There is movement in the streets, though to what end it is hard to say."
They remained on the wall for nearly an hour, while Maewyn surveyed the city, using her superior eyes to try to give some advanced warning. Jeren made one last inspection of the men, and when he returned, he could tell by Maywin's posture that something was amiss, her face registering an uncharacteristic shock.
"What do you see?"
"Look down at the base of the hill," Maewyn said, pointing. "I can hardly make sense of what it might be."
Gerund peered. There was something there, something big, but in the poor light it was impossible to make out, even as it started to move.
"Holy Eldaloth," Maewyn said, stepping back. "I've got to warn them."
She darted away without explaining, and Gerund turned his gaze back to the winding cobble road that led up to the castle. It took a while for what Maewyn saw to become plain to his human sight, but when it did, he joined the rest of the soldiers along the wall in muttering an oath. Mikik had unleashed his last horror upon them. Crona Drone, the abomination of the East. Before the Shalane could react, Saturnus roughly dragged her off the ground in a bruising grip that pinned her arms to her sides. Jen continued to bleed, clearly weakened with each pulse of the blood from the cut on his wrist. Without her touch, the curse covered both her and him in charred, ashen skin. Joran stood next to him, watching as Saturnus dragged her backward toward a greenish light, now casting ghoulish shadows across the rubble and reflecting off the slick blood. As he pulled her back, they jostled against scaly Uyumark, who was staring at the lantern, just as she had seen on that final night on the shores of Shroud Lake. By the sounds of scraping and crunching, more were filing in through the archway behind her.
"What are you doing?"
the Shalane yelled, struggling in vain against the embrace of her captor.
"He'll die!"
"I don't want to kill him," Joran said, stooping and grey with age, as she joined Saturnus in the midst of the Uyumark. "He has information I need, and he won't give it up without a little incentive. The way you two have been getting on, I think you'll be just what I need to persuade him."
Joran concentrated and muttered the healing words of blood magic. Hidden among the Uyumark, the Shalane had to crane around the transfixed creatures to see Jen slowly rise, drawing his sword as he noticed the enemies filling the chamber around him.
"Joran," he yelled, "what's the meaning of this? Let her go right now, or you will not leave here alive."
"I will not let her go. If you incant one word of blood magic, I will kill her, and Saturnus will let loose the Uyumark. Listen to me very carefully."
"If you want my help," Jen said, "you will let her go."
Joran scowled.
"Saturnus, you can aid, but you can't help me, and you know it,"
Joran returned angrily.
"And did you think I would let you restore Elder Lurimora while we were still in it? You know what would happen to us. You will uphold your end of the bargain to Saturnus, but I want something else. I want all the incantations of blood magic. Mikik taught me once so I could teach you, but then he took the knowledge from me. I know how to heal, but I want the rest of it. Teach me the words to bind power to a weapon. Teach me how to bring someone back to life."
"To what end, Joran?" Jen said. "It's over. There are no more cards to be played for your personal gain. Help me restore Keyhaul before it dies, or there is no point to any of this."
Joran pulled a long, thin dagger from her boot.
"The words, Jen. How do you bind the power of blood to a weapon? Now!"
"How do I know you won't just kill the Shalane and set the Uyumark loose anyway?"
Duran put the point of the blade to the Shalane's neck, dimpling the skin.
The words!
Stop, I'll tell you.
With a painful point at her throat, the Shalane kept as still as she could, listening as Jen repeated the words she had heard Mikkik speak in Aldemar's vision of Eldaroth's death, the invocation of the dark speech seeming to darken the room further. Duran absorbed the knowledge greedily, eyes shining.
Good,
she crowed once Jen finished.
Tell me, Shalane, would you give the power of your blood to release Sir Tornus from his long, tormented life?
Yes, of course, the Shalane answered.
Duran removed the blade point from her neck, and the Shalane took a deep breath of relief. With a quick jab, the Ash Witch plunged the blade into her side. The searing pain emptied the Shalane's mind of thought, a soundless scream issuing from her open mouth until her lungs caught up enough to issue it out loud. If it wasn't for Saturnus's inescapable grip, she would have collapsed in agony. Duran keeping the blade inside her body while she groaned. Jen started to incant.
Stop, or she dies, Duran yelled. I want all the incantations, Jen. Do it now, or this will get messy.
Saturnus, let her go, Jen begged. You were a knight once. Let her go, and I will destroy you now.
Duran twisted the blade in the Shalane's side, her blood dripping down her hip and leg, staining her riding dress. Her screams brought Jen up short.
The words,
Duran demanded while the Shalane cried.
And if I sense for one second that you are using them to heal this place, she will die.
Take the knife out of her side, and I will tell you.
Tell me, and then I'll take the knife out of her side. Quit bargaining and do what I say.
But the incantations are long.
Then you had best begin.
As Jen recited the spells to Duran, the Shalane felt life draining from her, the pain of the knife dissolving slowly under her weakness as the room around her seemed to dim and spin. She rallied herself, prodding her eyes open with sheer will.
Now let her go!
One last thing, Duran said, smiling wickedly. Throw yourself into the chasm, and I will let her live. Take a step forward or attempt to use magic, and this blade goes to her heart.
Let me heal, Kihal.
I will heal it after I am far enough away, Duran said. You are no longer needed. In you go.
She punctured the command with another painful twist of the blade that brought the Shalane out of her haze to writhe in agony. Face ashen and eyes wet, Jen turned toward the edge.
No, Jen, don't, the Shalane cried, tears sliding down her face. Please, I cannot live without you. I won't.
Goodbye, Shalane,
Jen said, sheathing his sword and peering down into the darkness.
Whatever you do, live. Live and love.
Wait.
In her weakness, a blind fury awakened, a primal need to keep Jen alive, to repay every goodness he had blessed her life with. He had saved her enough. It was her turn to repay. A surge of energy, her last, rose within her, and with all her might she pushed her body into Joran's blade, twisting to drive it deep within her. Blood flowed freely, streaming down in a cascade of red. Jen howled in rage, and the Shalane knew no more.